Thanks for tapping into Untapped Keg podcast, where we look at different perspectives into sobriety and mental health so that you can take something and implement it into your own life. Here, we believe there's only one right way to sobriety. That's the way that works for you. I'm RJ Zimmerman, and I'm excited to be joined with life coach, fitness trainer, binge eating coach, someone who helps people heal their relationship with food, Michelle Kessler. How are you doing today, Michelle?
I'm doing great. Thanks, RJ. How are you?
I am busy in a good way and just surviving the kids today. So,
right. Okay. I hear you. Yeah. I don't have any kids around yet, but I have friends and family who are parents, and I get that.
It's every once in a while you get to have those days where you thrive, and then sometimes it's just that day of nope, survive. Let's just get to the next day. We'll see if it's a thrive day.
Yeah.
So, Michelle, could you give us a little bit of a background into yourself and how you got here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when it comes to like food and my relationship with food, I had like all the way from, you know, as far as I can remember as a kiddo, I mean, not baby, but kid level. I had times when I was using food to cope, kind of anxiety around food, kind of a picky eater. But I didn't really notice it being, it wasn't really a problem for me per se that I realized until probably college. And that is because I got to college and gained the stereotypical freshman 15. And for whatever reason, that for me was terrifying. I hadn't been someone who'd struggled with weight in my past before then. But at that moment, you know, I had just started to gain some weight. And it was really actually a moment when I was in my college room dorm, and I was finishing up an essay. I had procrastinated on this essay by eating and eating and eating. And that was something that I had done in the past many times. The essay was due at midnight, and I sent it in, I remember, at 11:58. Just barely made it, story of my life at the time. And I looked around me, and I was just, the floor was covered in empty Pop-Tart wrappers. Cinnamon Pop-Tart wrappers. And I was just honestly, like, I was bloated. I was ashamed. I was disgusted with myself. And I just hated how I hated the fact that I was procrastinating with food. But beyond that, I was using it to just kind of cope with everything. Like, I was feeling lost. I didn't really have a clear direction in my life at the time. I had lots of low self-esteem. And was just kind of using food to deal with that, my kind of lack of feeling like enough. And so anyway, at that point it was like, okay, I got to turn this around. I saw a future me, and I was like, if I keep going this route, I'm going to be sick. I'm going to be gaining more and more weight, and I'm not okay with any of that. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to start running, and I'm going to start eating better. Got into, for the next several years, an obsession with healthy eating and fitness. I ran and ran and ran, ran my first half marathon, ended up being recruited onto the college cross country team. There was lots of good stuff. I loved it. And I lost the weight that I had gained, and then some more. And it kind of flipped into the opposite direction, where I was now controlling my eating so severely that I actually got underweight. I lost my menstrual cycle at the time, which is actually really common for people who struggle with restrictive dieting, for women who do. And yeah, it was just, I was suffering from some weird like dizziness and anxiety and panic attacks, hormonal problems. And at the same time, despite like being really fit and athletic and having all this like control around my food, I was still binge eating when no one was looking. And it was like, why? Why is this happening? So years of that, years of trying to just kind of like over and over get myself to stop. It was like Monday morning, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna stop binge eating today. What can I do to set myself up? I'm gonna throw out any of the foods I would normally overeat. But then sometime around 4 or 5 p.m. usually, it was like I turned into a different human being. I wasn't me anymore. I was like all I could think about was eating food. So that over and over until finally I had actually started, I became a personal trainer. I had been doing that a couple of years. And the entire time I was good at the exercise part of things, but I felt like a fraud because I was supposed to be teaching people about health and eating properly, and I couldn't get myself to do that. So at that point, it was really like the drive to be better for my clients, be better for like have actually a sense of being okay in my career that drove me to get support and get help. I ended up hiring a life coach. Didn't go the typical route for this, but she fortunately helped me to really dig into a lot of the things that were driving me to overeat from a mental perspective, from a thought and mindset perspective. She also pointed out rather blatantly just, hey, do you think maybe the fact that you are like exercising all day long, fasting, drinking coffee, and pretty much not eating all day might be part of the reason you're overeating at night? And so I was like, oh my gosh, seems obvious, but I, when I was in it, was not seeing that. It was a blind spot to me, despite all of the fitness and nutrition information I had. So stuff like that. Anyway, long story short, a couple of years went by of like working with her, stop binge eating, building my trust back, and totally reinventing how I saw nutrition and how I saw what healthy eating actually is. I don't do what most personal trainers do anymore. I don't just hold people accountable. I don't just tell them what to do. I don't think that stuff works, not long term. My goal for the people that I work with is for them to not need me anymore, to be able to trust themselves around food, and trust themselves to take care of themselves. And so anyway, that gives you kind of a gist of my story and how I got to where I'm at.
And it's amazing to me hearing that you tell that story again, like the parallels that have to do with stopping drinking or stopping using, you know, whatever it is that you are leaning into. And this is something that we talked about the other day when we talked setting up this podcast was ritualized comfort seeking, right? And how that I think it was Laura McCowan said it, and I heard it from a client, and I'm like, yes, but the things that we do with that, whether it be food or that crappy TV show or sleep, sometimes, you know, when you're oversleeping and you're like, I need a nap. There's healthy naps, and then there's naps that are just like avoiding. And how your story really parallels with that. And I like what you said about trying to make it so that your clients don't need you anymore, because that's how I feel too. Like, get to a point where, okay, you don't really need me anymore. You could use a perspective check every once in a while, but you're doing this on your own. Like, that's the skills that you acquire. How does it feel when you are helping someone work on their relationship with food and you see that they kind of have that breakthrough that of mentally of, oh, that's what I'm using this for. I don't actually want that. I just want the feeling that's on the other side, or like during it for a few seconds, right? And they break through that. What does that feel like?
Oh man, I mean, it's a good question. Like, my clients, when they have like any revelation, like I'm on the other side of the phone, and typically it's a phone call, so they don't see me. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm like, you know, like holding back a scream, like it feels so good. So yeah, like just getting to see someone change their life and just have that often really subtle shift in the way they're thinking. It's usually not a, like, it's not a dramatic change. It's a subtle change. And that's why it works versus like this kind of black and white thinking that they used to be in. So it's really cool to see. That said, I will say with binge eating and emotional eating, I think one thing that's important to point out is when I'm working with people, usually the like stopping using food to cope is like the last thing we do. Because normally I start talking to somebody who I haven't worked with yet, right? And they're telling me, oh, Michelle, like I know I should meditate instead. I know I should take a bath instead or go for a walk. Like I should, this isn't a good way to cope, but I keep doing it. And they've already been trying to like fight themselves and force themselves not to do this. And find the fighting doesn't work. And so we have to like address like the cause first. Like the restrictive dieting, the actually telling themselves that this isn't okay to be eating at all. Eliminate the shame around it first. And then it's like they have these moments later where we get into the, okay, now I know I'm full. I know I've had enough. I'm taking care of myself. I can eat whatever I want. And I'm thinking about turning to food because I feel really sad right now. I could do something different. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes perfect sense because that is my approach when I coach around alcohol is, okay, let's look at everything else that's going on around that. And, you know, this is like this Naked Mind who I'm certified through. That's what they coach around too. Look at everything around it. And then we will start to look at, you know, why we are using alcohol and why we end up, you know, binge drinking, drinking more than we want, going back to it. And you're talking about having those 5 p.m. cravings. And it's like, I see that all the time in clients. And like, you know, that's something that I would have come, you know, Friday or Saturday when I was drinking like the last couple of years, because that was when I knew I could drink and get away with it because I didn't have to be at work in the morning. I didn't have this stuff. So let's get it in. Right. And just binge. And it's amazing how these journeys are so paralleled and the things that you can see when you're working through the shame. What do you like to really start with to like get to the root of what that shame is coming from?
Good question. One of the first things that I usually do with someone is help them to clarify why they're doing this in the first place. Like clarify the fact that there's more than one reality here. I want to keep binge eating and I want to stop. And those two like things are both true. And rather than fighting this, I need to stop, or sorry, fighting the desire to binge, right? We just look at like, okay, what's it there for? Like, how is this actually, this habit serving this person? Why would we be doing this in the first place? What is it giving you? Like, what are the actual benefits? Because there are benefits that otherwise we wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And I think part of that process in and of itself is letting go of the absolute shame around it, the like, not even like total, it's like we stop avoiding this side of ourselves that wants to do it. Does that make sense? So I think that's huge in starting to address the shame and make it less shameful. And especially when they're talking to someone on the other end, like myself, who has been there, was doing the same thing. that massively helps to reduce shame, not feeling alone.
And that not feeling alone goes a really long way. And when they know they're not going to be judged, like it
Right.
makes it easier to look into that shame. And everything you said, like, is something that I also look into with clients. And when you start to actually look into it instead of just avoiding that shame, it's amazing what you find underneath it. And finding that root, it really does lead to, oh, that's where this is coming from. And you find that understanding of yourself that you didn't know was in there that you can now use. And like, oh, that's why I do this. Okay, that makes sense. So I can stop getting mad at myself and just say, yeah, of course you want to do this, but let's do it this way because it'll be easier on myself, or I'll thank myself tomorrow morning, or this is actually the action I want to take, not the one that I'm used to. And
yes.
when you find people starting to understand themselves more, how do you see the understanding starting to manifest with their relationship with food?
So, I mean, sometimes it can be very apparent and honestly, to me, seeming magical. like, because sometimes we start to address the shame and it's so powerful letting that go that this person actually stops wanting to binge almost immediately. I have had that happen a couple of times. We're just like one or two coaching calls and they're already like losing this desire to turn to food. That doesn't happen every time, and I'm careful to say that, right? Because everyone has a different journey and it's okay if that doesn't happen right away. But I think I'll see it manifest in that way, or just like a slight change. Maybe it's just a slight change in the way they talk about it. Instead of like when they initially bring it up, like, oh, like this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I do this. I just have to stop. I just need to stop. Now it's like they start to switch that up a little. It starts to sound more like interest. You know, I turned to food the other day and I'm just kind of looking at like, well, I guess I didn't really eat breakfast that morning. And then I had like these back-to-back meetings and I wasn't enjoying them. I wasn't wanting to be there. And like the stuff that led up to it, and it becomes more of an interest and a curiosity as to why that might be happening, why they have this desire in the first place, instead of just being an immediate, what the heck's wrong with me?
Right?
Yeah.
That's the, oh, maybe there's not something wrong with me. Maybe this is a valid response to what's going on.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's like, if that could be, if that's, and you'll see it on like my Instagram page over and over, like nothing is wrong with you. If you're a binge eater, nothing is wrong with you. Absolutely. I'm not just saying that. Like, it is a survival mechanism. It is a natural, it means that you are working just as designed. And we just want to like care for that design. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And when you could take that design into account, and now with you being the physical trainer side of it too, like that overall health aspect that comes with that, that, oh, this is how I'm designed to be. So how can I make this like work for me rather than how can I fight against it?
Yes. Yes. And I hope it's okay if I jump off of this, but like,
yes, absolutely.
This is where my perspective of health and fitness changed so much, because it's like in the old system where it would be a lot of just like, okay, you hire someone like me, a trainer, I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm going to help you track everything you eat. I'm going to be there to make sure that you work out. and like you said, it's this fight to get yourself to do things or to get yourself not to. And without the trainer there, you would just be off on your own being not doing anything. And I think that's totally wrong. We're using like this mechanism that hasn't worked, this just kind of get yourself to do things, get yourself not to sort of deal, instead of addressing the root. And when we address the root, it's like all of a sudden, I have this happen all the time where it's like the same human being who used had a Peloton at home and never used it and dreaded using it is now actually enjoying using it and wanting to on a regular basis because they care about themselves. The same person that dreaded going to the gym, it was always an experience of shame and working out really hard and beating themselves up, is now like, oh, hey, Michelle, I had this like really exhausting day at work. And you know, the first thing I wanted to do, go to the gym. Because it felt like something good for them, you know? And that can happen when we when we address that root, when we treat these people like there's nothing wrong with them and they're not incapable of taking care of themselves without a trainer looking over them, you know?
Yeah. And you give the people, you know, people the chance to, this is like you're building self-worth, right? And
yeah.
This goes back to, I'm really big in defining words for yourself, especially words that are used in the zeitgeist, like popular words, like, you know, let's talk about intuition. Let's talk about being in alignment with yourself. Let's talk about, okay, define those things for yourself. One of them that I've, you know, forgiveness I've defined for myself, but self-care. What is self-care to me, right? And what I've come up with in my own definition is keeping small promises to myself. And so that doesn't mean that sometimes I don't splurge on myself and I'm like, yep, it's okay to like be luxurious with myself today. But the small promises, I'm going to, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to my Kung Fu and workout class as much as I can. It doesn't mean I do it every single time, but it's a big deal for me to get that into my schedule and try to make it if I can. If I can't, okay, I'm going to make the next one. Like it's going to, I have to come back to that. Another one would be, you know, journaling when I try to do it every morning, but sometimes, you know, some mornings are chaotic and I can't get to it, but just taking the time to write out my thoughts and emotions, a small promise to myself that I use all the time and people are like, what? And I'm like, yeah, this is self-care, brushing my teeth twice a day. I am a pro in the morning. Come at night, ADHD, medication's worn off. That executive dysfunction is like, yeah, it's not happening, dude. Like you want to, but it's nope. We're not going to do it. But what I do because I'm a dad is I make my kids brush their teeth when they're here. So, okay, I'm going to brush my teeth earlier than I'd like, but I'm going to brush it with them so they see me brushing my teeth. And I'm keeping that small promise to myself. As you keep those small promises, you start to see that you're worth taking care of yourself. Now it becomes easier doing those things that they seem like they were a heavy lift at first, but it becomes easier the more that you take care of yourself. Oh, I really should do this thing because I'm worth that. Oh, I can take this leap. I'll make it work because guess what? I always make something work. I always come out the other side. Okay. There's going to be some challenges, but I can do challenging things. Yeah. And so all of that to say, like the self-care aspect, getting people to see that self-care and find those coping mechanisms that work for themselves and to see that they're worth making big changes in their life, because they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So huge. And I love it. It's like, each person I work with, and I mean each person I meet, like right, you, we have, it's totally different the way like self-care might look. But like you said, I think that was probably the thing I'm still continuously the most grateful for in my recovery, was gaining a sense of trust in myself, like knowing myself as someone who followed through. And it's not about being perfect. Of course, I mess up sometimes, but like I know myself to like, that won't spiral into a bunch of not doing it and, you know, bad ways of coping and worse and worse and worse, like it used to. It's like most of the time I'm going to show up. Most of the time I'm going to follow through. I trust myself to do that, to show up, you know. And if it doesn't work out, it's just a matter of learning. Like, oh, what do I need to set myself up? Like, you have your kids, right? Oh, okay, what's going to help me to actually get this done? I'm going to do it with my kids. That's going to make it easier on me and like make it more likely to happen, right? So anyway, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and that's how you can approach life too, right? Like, what can I do for myself with this understanding that I can make it more likely for me to choose that? It doesn't mean, like you said, that doesn't mean that every single time you do that, but it does mean that it's more likely to occur and that you're going to go back to it. Because, you know, the way that you approach things, I'm guessing, is the way that I approach things is progress, not perfection. Like, we're humans. There's going to be some leeway. But where are you moving more often than not? Is it forward or is it just looking at the past? And when you're moving forward, you're going to gain that those skills and those underlying understandings of yourself that are going to help you just immensely in life and in those challenging times. And as you know, you're working with people and you see them make these small epiphanies, how does that like come back to you and have these understandings that help yourself be able to use in your life?
I mean, immensely. Yeah. So, I mean, there's like, what do people say? Like, coaches often say, I learn like more or just as much from my clients as I do, you know, as they learn.
Yeah.
I love that. And I'm also like, well aware, like, I also want to be stand in the integrity of being someone who it like actually can teach this person. It's not just learning from them. But yeah, I'm trying to think of like a specific example. I'll see now often when I'm working with a person, I'll see like a reflection of like a past self, right? Like, oh yeah, I really get what that was like to struggle with that. But then often what I'll also notice is as they're sharing with me kind of what they're going through in this journey, I'll notice myself like actually struggling with a similar issue yet again in another place in my life. So maybe I've kind of, maybe I've regained like this sense of trust in myself in around food and exercise and health. And I feel really solid in that, like awesome. And over here in this area where I'm really trying to grow in like my coaching practice and running a business and like helping other people, that still feels like there's a lot of room to grow. And I'm not coming up with a specific example right now, but like, I remember the other day my client mentioning something, and I was like, oh my gosh, I need that right now, like to do that in my business life, you know? Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's something that I find too, and that's why I wanted to ask you the question is just how much you are talking through something and you know about it in like the certain aspect of your life, and they're like, wait a second, that applies to the business side, that applies to the content creation side, that applies to, I needed to hear that today, and I heard it come out of my own mouth. My goodness.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely. It feels pretty cool sometimes. I don't know if this sounds too woo-woo, but like coaching is this beautiful experience of like sometimes I feel like the stuff that comes out of my mouth, if I'm really in the groove and I'm really just in service for this person, it feels like it's not exactly me. Or it's my higher self. I don't know. Something's just coming out. I'm like, wow, that was not to blow up my own head, but like that was good. I'm honored that I got to be able to say that because, yeah, it was good.
Oh, there's so many times where like I'll have that same thing where I'm like, I wish I was recording that. I just want to take those words and just like have it in front of me at my desk. And yeah, it is. I'm not 100% sure where that comes from, right? But probably is like the higher self, that inner knowing, the things that you know and you just haven't necessarily. It happens on the podcast a lot too, where I'll be talking through something and I'm like, oh, I never thought about it from that perspective before. Or I never said that out loud. And now that I'm saying it out loud, that rings so true that I could use that. And that's where I feel like the podcast is so amazing for my mental health, and having conversations like this that bring up perspectives that, sure, I knew at one point, or like the lesson was in my mind at one point, but I hadn't thought about it in so long that I need to understand this lesson again, maybe at a deeper level, maybe just going back to the basics and the fundamentals and be like, oh yeah, that is true about emotions. That is true about feelings. I need to remember that right now, because going through, you know, just like a life patch where it's not necessarily like a massive struggle, but it's a big challenge, and that's okay. Those will happen. So what can you do to move yourself forward and get yourself to a place of being able to work through that?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the sharing on the podcast, and how like you'll say something and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I really need that right now. I was literally just talking to a girl yesterday on podcast, and she does similar work to me in like the binge eating realm. And we were talking about how powerful it has been for our recovery, actually, to be coaches, to share, because of just repeating this stuff over and over, and just being like you said, oh yeah, that was something I needed to learn in the past, and I need to learn it again right now. And the aspect where it's like, the more I think you express these things, the more ingrained they become. And I think it helps to break a ton of the shame yet again. Because, the more you share, I think Brené Brown has a quote, and she, you know, she's a shame researcher. Big fan of hers.
Same,
but she
big
has a
fan.
Shame can't stand being spoken. And so I try to live by that. And I think, yeah, it's just powerful.
Yes, Brené Brown has completely transformed my inner dialogue. And I like to share that with other people. And so, you know, I like to teach and talk about self-talk, and those I am statements that really come with shame. I am whatever that outcome was. I am, you know, it, a lot of times for me, especially, it was, you know, not worthy. It was, to be completely candid, I am a piece of shit. Okay. And then break that down. Is that true? No. Okay, where's that coming from? Where did that start? Okay, I know where that started. Okay, what about this makes you feel like a piece of shit? And then like breaking things down from the I am perspective to like the what is, or why, or is that true? And now all of a sudden you can work through it. But when you just have that statement of I am, that's a complete and full statement. There's nothing to work with there. So now you're just stuck with whatever it is.
Yeah, I was working through that almost exactly with a client literally right before this this chat, and she was really struggling and dealing with this procrastination and just feeling like disorganized in her life and not being able to handle that. And she kept saying things like, "I'm such a procrastinator," and I know my mom's a procrastinator as well. And, you know, this kind of just, like you said, I am. And it's been a journey with her of that a lot, and just being like, okay, yes. And it's not helpful, to come from the, I am a procrastinator. It's more helpful if we can dig into that a little bit. And so that's what we did. You know, we dug into like, okay, like what's setting you up to end up like being late for things? How can we set you up for success? she deals with like a myriad of different issues that actually cause her like to be forgetful in a medical sense, right? Not just generally forgetful. And so she deals with a lot of aspects that really can make it a lot tougher for her, and those are real. And like my job is to help her, like empower her to take whatever steps she needs to be okay with whatever she needs. You need more reminders than someone else? Fine. We're going to give you those. Like you need routine and structure more than somebody else does? That's okay. Like let's give it to you because you aren't a procrastinator. We just need to set you up for success. Anyway, I kind of rambled there, but
no, you didn't. You didn't. And like you're speaking like straight to me. So like I mentioned, like with ADHD, I realized I need reminders. So now every single time I have something coming up, in the calendar. And not only is it in the calendar, I have two reminders. I have two alarms to get up in the morning. I have alarms throughout the day if I have something important I have to get to. And that's just what I have to do to be able to take that mental load off of myself. And then I'll be able to take that what was using that and put it into, okay, what am I doing right now? What could I be doing? What should I be doing? Where are things going? Okay, I'm going to take that one thing and like start working on it. And I know I will be alerted when the next thing needs to happen. And like that transformed how I've been able to like just honestly go about my business and just be less stressed throughout the day because I'm not trying to juggle what in my mind what's going on. And then I can't really start this because I'm not gonna be able to get it done by the time the alarm goes off. Well, okay, but get done what you can. And by the time the alarm goes off, maybe you can come back to it later. But another thing that I realized as you were talking too about shame, and I do this, but I didn't have the words to describe it. Like if you take that I am statement and that second half, if you use it as a descriptor of yourself, that is where you get stuck. But if you could take that I am statement and make it into the action that is happening right now, that can allow you to like dig into the root. So like, I am a procrastinator. Okay. That's what you're telling yourself you are. So that's like what you're going to do. Whereas if you do the I am procrastinating, okay, now I can look into why am I procrastinating? What is it that I'm avoiding? What can I do to get not be procrastinating right now? And that's another way that you can like break apart those I am statements to be able to utilize. And it's just one of those things with being on the podcast and talking things through.
No, I love that so much. And it's like, I could go on and on about how many ways that kind of work has changed my life from where I was just a few years ago.
Me too.
And just a side note here is like that aspect comes in a lot with people I first speak to who maybe they've been diagnosed with binge eating disorder. I think personally, I was kind of lucky in a way because of my own stubbornness. I thought, I don't want to be labeled a binge eater. Like part of it was because I was just thought it was embarrassing and like shameful and all that. But I was just like, I was stubborn and I was like, no. So I didn't go the direction of therapy. Mind you, there's a lot of good therapy out there. I didn't go the direction of therapy because to me at the time, I was thinking like, well, people usually like call you someone with an eating disorder and you have to kind of manage that the rest of your life. And I was like, well, that's not what I want. I didn't go the direction of like Overeaters Anonymous either, because in that direction, there's a lot of, I am a food addict. I need to structure my life in a way that like manages that. That works for some people. Some people have gotten a lot out of it. And I didn't go that way, for better or for worse. And lucky me, it turned out that that worked out well for me because I was able to get to a point of just really getting beyond binge eating. And I think largely because I just refuse to accept I will forever be one a binge eater. And I introduce this idea to people sometimes, and it's like they've never even considered the idea that, oh my gosh, I could actually break free from this. This is actually something I don't have to live with the rest of my life. And I'm like, no. And it's been really cool to be able to like introduce that to people, because then it's like their life is a whole new trajectory. Like they could do so much more. Yeah, anyway, I could go on and on.
And that is such a perfect thing, like I talked about with ADHD. Like, okay, a lot of people in the mental health, like, and as you said, with, you know, binge eating, going to Binge Eating Anonymous, like same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous, like a lot of alcoholic term, period, looking at that. When, like, right now, I think the majority of people still believe that you are your diagnosis, right? Whereas your diagnosis is actually just an understanding of yourself, if that's what you want to use it for. Like, it doesn't have to be defined who you are. And that's the beauty of exactly what you're talking about. Like with ADHD, yeah, I have ADHD. The thing is, it's not an excuse for missing time with a friend. It's not an excuse for why I didn't get some work done, why I missed an appointment with a client. What it is it's an understanding that I can use to how my brain is wired, that I can give myself grace for if I'm late to something or I need more alarms and schedules. I could, you know, why it's hard for me to brush my teeth at night sometimes, like having that understanding. Okay, now I don't have to be hard on myself for this, and I can actually use it to help set up things in the, you know, what's going on. And I can use it to look at the past and be like, oh, that's why that was hard for me. That's why I did that. And that's just one example where, as we talked about earlier, getting to the root of like shame, of the root of a lot of what we have done, or like, I would say it would be the root of the actions that we took and sometimes still take. If you get to the root of the cause of that, oh, that is from this part of my life. Of course I did that. And guess what? It worked for a long time, but it's not working anymore. And that's okay. It's okay that it worked. Now that it doesn't work, that's okay too. And we can try different things so that we can take different actions going forward and actually be in alignment with ourselves, be who we want to be, and realize our past doesn't have to define us, but we can define ourselves moving into the future.
So powerful. And I just love the way you said, like, something like a diagnosis. It's like, again, really subtle. Like, the difference here, it's like, no, we're not just saying that the diagnosis isn't real. We're saying it's an opportunity to give yourself the grace. Like when you said that, I was like, yes, the grace and understanding to be like, okay, I need something specific. I need something different, and that's okay. But it's also doesn't mean I can't live a wonderful, fulfilling, awesome life and grow and find solutions that work for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you just look at, you know, I'm going to go really dramatic with this, but somebody who's diagnosed with cancer, we don't say they are cancer, right? We say, well, they have cancer. So, you know, they have to change their diet for this. They have to take certain medication. They have to be more careful when it comes to diseases, right? That's the understanding that we have of them. But when it comes to mental health, oh, you are bipolar. You are ADHD. You are all of these things. And it's like, no, that's just an understanding of myself and the things that I can do to better make my life work for me, rather than just take myself and jam it into life and be like, why is this not working? Why does everybody else have it easier? Why is this? And I'm talking about that from, you know, my own frustrations, because that's what I used to do.
Yeah.
And now having this understanding is like, just open things up.
Yeah, same. I used to do the same. It was just over and over slamming my head against the wall, like figuratively, right? I mean, actually, as a kid, I didn't, but for real. But like, yeah, just what's why, like, woe is me, like, what's wrong with me, like, why does nothing work for me, like, just seriously, just like something is wrong with me, and what is it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it sucks. That sucks. It sucks to feel that way and live that way. So, yeah.
And I think this is a good place to segue to this too. Like, we talked about almost giving people permission to like binge on what they want and how others will look at that like, oh, I get to eat as many Oreos as I want, really? Or, and this is the same thing we do with alcohol is like, we're not gonna shame you for having alcohol. You can drink if you wanna drink. We just ask you to bring awareness to that. What is it I'm looking for? Do I actually get that? And how people think, oh, that's gonna make me overindulge. That's gonna give me permission. I can just go and do everything that I wanna do. But what they don't realize is you bring awareness to it, and it's like this deterrent. It's like, I'm not actually, this actually isn't fun. What'd you do to me? A
Oh my gosh.
Jedi mind trick.
Yeah. Hey, it can be sometimes bittersweet. Like yes, it's like elimination of the shame and taboo can be incredibly magical. And I
Yes.
have that happen with clients, right? Where it's like Ben and Jerry's ice cream, one of my clients would always binge on it, couldn't stop. And it was just, we eliminated the taboo around it. We did practical steps to kind of like intentionally have her be allowed to get it. And it's like, she forgot about it. 2 weeks, talked to her about it. She's like, oh, I forgot it's in the freezer. You know what? It didn't taste as good as it used to taste. It's crazy. It's crazy. But I think it's so fascinating that I didn't know that about that. It was similar with alcoholism. I thought that there maybe might have been a difference there because with food, you can't like cut it out, right? So it's like you're kind of forced into this having to allow it and then move that direction. But yeah, it's amazing to hear that it's similar,
So
actually.
it's there's this that ritualized comfort seeking that, or escapism is what I used to call it. And when it comes to that, that is really where addiction is. Yes, you're using and you're putting something onto this external item that you're getting out of it. And there is, chemical dependencies that happen. There were studies of soldiers from Vietnam that were using heroin over in Vietnam, and they would out like I want to say like 80% of them when they came back home. I'd have to look. It's in the Johann Hari TED Talk, and the study like 80% of them didn't ju they just quit heroin cold turkey and didn't have the harsh symptoms of coming off of it that some others had, and then other people, when they came back and went to their life, and it was like their life was not good. Like they were, living in bad conditions. They went back to maybe poor areas. They were the ones that continued using, and they were the ones that had the symptoms coming off of it. So, like a
Wow.
lot of this ritualized, the comfort seeking, the escapism, the mind is really powerful. And so, if you don't want to escape, you're not going to crave it. And it doesn't mean that there's not chemical dependencies, and it doesn't mean that there's not
Right.
these pulls and these draws to these drugs. But what it does mean is that is just that if you can find a way to enjoy your life right now, that draw and that pull that you're talking about is going to go away. The same thing with like the Ben and Jerry's, you're just going to forget about it. You'll just look back one day and be like, oh shit, it's been like 10 days since I thought about drinking alcohol. Like, when did that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And like you said, because I'm sure people will get in some amount of fit sometimes with this. Like, there is a biological, component.
Yeah.
With food, I think it's probably even less so though. Oops, the sound went off. I can't hear you anymore.
Yeah, I was talking to my youngest right now.
Okay.
he's banging a ball against the wall. That's why I wanted to be
Oh,
picked up,
cute.
but.
Cute. Yeah, anyway, so yeah, there it's like not acknowledging that, and like, you know, the work I do with clients, we address, you know, the biological side too. It's like, okay, we're making sure you're actually nourishing your body, and you're getting enough protein, and you're doing things that would get rid of things that would cause cravings, right? Unnecessary cravings. And that's where nourishing comes in. And it's like, it's both. It's both.
Yeah.
And it, like, when you, I see people like, even all kinds of different diets, though, still, when they address like the shame component, the mental side, it makes a massive, massive difference.
And that's the thing that you started talking out about. One sec.
That was my toy.
Bye-bye, Ezra.
My boy and toy.
Ezra.
They got Happy Meal toys, and I was holding them so that they would clean all their toys up, and so now they've had enough. But just so you know, all of this is going to be kept in because I don't edit. It's just part of life. People get behind the scenes every once in a while.
Okay, cool.
What you started talking about with the both things are true. I want to stop binge eating. And I also want to binge eat, like both those things. And those things, that's so true in life. Like you can have both things at the same time. Like, you know, the bittersweet emotion. That's what I like to pull this up on is you can be happy looking back at the past and like, and, or honestly, whether it's a person, relationships, past memories, you can also be sad that they're not there. And you can hold both those things at the same time. You don't have to have either or. And that's life. You don't have to have either or. Both things can be true. When you start to accept that and it helps you to move through these really complex things, you can start to give yourself more of an understanding that with that progress, okay, I ate a whole sleeve of Oreos today. I didn't want to, but it'd been, you know, a week since I did that. It wasn't like, everyday kind of a thing. Okay, and then you look a week later, oh, I only ate three Oreos. Damn, like that's really great progress. And when you can hold those two things, like you can see that progress instead of just like, I ate that whole sleeve of Oreos. I'm terrible. I suck at this. I can't, there's gonna be no changing. I just can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting you pointed out in that circumstance too. It's like sort of you can think about like relapse, right? Again, holding the space of I just binged again and I haven't in a while and I thought I was doing better and this really sucks and I hate how that feels and it scares me. And this is an opportunity to learn. It doesn't mean I'm failing. And what maybe was different this time? A lot of the time I look at that for somebody, like, were you thinking about it a little differently? Afterwards, you thought, oh, this is a learning experience. Did you notice a little bit more about why you did it? There's probably differences that point out progress. And if you can stay with that and not dive into the shame pool, then we can keep moving forward.
And that's where you can hold yourself to that standard and want to do better. Like what, while giving yourself like that, that grace that, well, I was doing better. And so that's good, but I made a decision that I didn't necessarily want to make. And that's something that I want to change. So, you know, holding both those things at the same time, all three of those things, really, it is possible. It is. And it, it feels like mental gymnastics when you first start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's nice to have a coach there to be able to, you know, point you in a direction. And as you said earlier on some of the stuff, like you can't read the label from inside the bottle. So,
oh my gosh.
You know, like yeah. you weren't eating throughout the day. So of course you're eating at night and like,
yeah.
Oh, that's so simple. Why didn't I think about that? Well, it's okay you didn't think about it because you're in it every single day. So, yeah.
It's in, like, gosh, it's so insane how mind blowing that was for me. And that when she pointed that out, the most obvious thing. And it's not like I didn't have all of the training and knowledge to know that myself. But yeah, you cannot see the label from inside. You just can't. It's so clouded and tunnel vision in there. Yeah.
It really is. And you know, something I like that saying of, you know, you can't read the label from inside the jar or bottle or, you know, whatever you want to use. But sometimes I also like to say, sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees. And sometimes you have problems seeing the trees through the forest, because when your perspective shifts and where your focus is determines on what you're going to be able to see. So if you're just seeing the tree that's right in front of you, you're not going to see the forest that's all around. Mm-hmm. And if all you can see is the forest, you're not going to be able to see the next best step, which is the tree that's right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so having both those perspectives too, I get caught up in that all the time where I'm looking at the big picture and I'm like, there's no way. That is way too far away. That's way too far off. I can't do that. Then somebody will point out, well, what if you just started with this? And I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah, if I would just do this one thing, that would lead to the next and the next. And now that doesn't seem so far off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I need sometimes. And other times it's like I'm focused on this one thing and I'm like, I just can't get this one thing. And they're like, but what if you went in a different direction from that tree that would be similar, but it's like a little bit different? You started walking into the forest and it's like, oh yeah. Yeah. If I moved on from this one thing, that would probably get me past this one thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I had a coach at one point that called those blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just, you only see a certain way. It can help so much to just get a little bump in perspective.
Absolutely. That's life and having that willingness to seek out those different perspectives rather than just beating our heads up against the wall. Coming to such, it's needed, right? And it helps like at such opportune times when you're willing to seek those out. So, Michelle, this has been so much fun. And there's topics that I wanted to get to that we just haven't really had time
for.
Oh,
man.
So you're going to have to come back is what I'm saying. But if people want to keep up with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Yeah. So yeah, there's so much more to talk about. Side note, same back at you. Yeah. So Instagram is probably the best way, to reach me and kind of see the work I do and hang out and be part of the community. I post tons and tons of stuff on there. I've literally had people reach out to me occasionally who are like, hey, just watching some of your videos, going through your content, I'm already seeing a difference. I'm already binge eating less. So yeah, visit me over there and you can connect. I'm always open to chat in the DMs. So
we'll have those listed in the description too. So you can just click and follow over to follow Michelle, because she really does have some amazing content that will put you on the path that you'd like. So Michelle, thank you so much for joining us and having this conversation. I'm excited for you to come back. This really was a treat. So for those, you know, this is Untapped Keg Podcast, share it with a friend, somebody who you think could use this, hearing this episode, and leave us a review. Let me know how I'm doing. Give me some guests that you'd like to have on. And you know what? Let's leave a special review to tell me how much you enjoyed Michelle so that I can send that to her and be like, well, I guess it's time to come back on because listeners want you on again. So everybody have a great week. Let's be better tomorrow than we were today, because we don't make it. We tried. I love you. Bye, everyone.